I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network, and it's time for All Things Political. We have so much to talk about this hour. The first question of the hour is the goal of the United States after last week's airstrikes in Syria. Is the goal to deter more chemical attacks or try to end the Syrian conflict? Bob Franken, our guest, wrote a column last week saying even the tolerance of unspeakable evil seems to have limits, and it caused Donald Trump to do an absolute about-face. Now comes the hard part, trying to control the reaction and the reaction to the reaction, all of which can escalate into a war if diplomacy is not effectively utilized. We'll be talking about Russian meetings this week. Evidently, the word today is that Vladimir Putin will not be meeting with Rex Tillerson. Maybe that will change. We'll talk about the Secretary of State's visit to Moscow. We'll talk about American warships on their way to the coast of North Korea. We'll look at the new leaders of the House Russia investigation. Will there be a focus on the behavior of Donald Trump and associates, or will it turn into who implicated or disclosed their behavior? Will there be, with House Republicans, a full investigation of Donald Trump? And how is the equation changed as a result of the airstrikes in Syria, if at all? Neil Gorsuch was sworn in today, a big win for Donald Trump and for conservatives. And we have many other things to discuss this hour. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls for Bob Franken. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And our guest has been with us many times before, Emmy Award-winning reporter Bob Franken. He's covered combat in both wars in Iraq, covered the White House during the presidency of George W. Bush, the impeachment proceedings of President Bill Clinton, the Supreme Court, and Congress. He had a 20-year-plus career at CNN and served as the network's Capitol Hill correspondent and as a Supreme Court and White House reporter. He has worked for CBS News. He's a native of Baltimore and, we always like to say this, has strong Wisconsin connections, beginning his broadcast career in Marshfield, Wisconsin, and attending the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Bob, nice to talk to you again. Hi.
Yeah, but we've run out of time after that lengthy interview.
And I cut it short. I really did. We could have gone on for a much longer period of time. I was interested in what you wrote on Friday because, well, let's first start with the absolute about-face, as you call it, on the part of Donald Trump when it comes to Syria. Why was there an about-face?
Well, you know, that is really a question that more and more people are asking right now. The stated reason was, of course, the revulsion at the videos that we saw as a result of the attack.
Yes.
Let's not even call them alleged nerve gas attacks. Those were nerve gas attacks, which is considered an international war crime. And it is the kind of thing, unfortunately, that we have seen on occasion from Bashar al-Assad, the very, very ruthless dictator who is in Syria. There have been nearly 500,000 deaths as a result of the civil war there, that kind of thing. And so in any case, the stated reason, as an answer to your question, is that that he was just so off-put by the images that we got, that he basically left himself little choice but to have some sort of reaction. And to be perfectly honest about it, although 59 cruise missiles seems like an awful lot, that is really the mildest of reactions to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other more cynical explanation is that he has been in a downward spiral in terms of public approval since he came into office, and this was viewed as an opportunity to turn things around, and it certainly did. We had it in the terms of the commentators, many of whom just couldn't gush enough about Commander-in-Chief Donald Trump. But now there's a little bit of a skepticism that's seeping in. It's comparable, and I'm writing about this in my new column, which is going to be coming out in a couple of days. I'm writing about the reminder that Bill Clinton also attacked with cruise missiles a pharmaceutical manufacturer in the Sudan,
right.
Claiming that the administration was claiming that that had to do with the fact that it was really a chemical factory providing stuff for Obama, for Osama bin Laden. That was never proven, but the coincidence was that the day of the attack happened to be when Monica Lewinsky was appearing. And there are many people who say to this day that it was just a cynical opportunity to deflect attention away from that. And now we have Donald Trump, as I said, who perhaps, in the minds of many, was just trying to, in fact, turn things around. And apparently the public approval ratings are quite high for him.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that we tend to do that when there's an act of war? It's kind of a rally around the decision, no matter what the decision is. People tend to be in favor of that in this country. Why is that, Bob?
Well, because we're Americans.
Right.
But there is, to be perfectly honest, part of the negative feeling about Donald Trump is that he was over his head, that he was indecisive, that he had been in a downward spiral pretty much since he'd taken over office, because he had really sort of demeaned the office. Now here he was utilizing his full power as the commander-in-chief, and it's the kind of thing that a militaristic country like the United States can react positively to.
Mm-hmm. It's such a mess, all that's going on in Syria. It makes you wonder, have people sat around the table at Mar-a-Lago or wherever they're sitting these days and looked at the consequences, looked at what might be an effective long-term strategy in Syria? Because it's gone on for so long, and it's a horrendous war.
Well, it is a horrendous war, and Barack Obama, as president, has come under quite a bit of criticism for his indecisiveness when it came to Syria, or at least indecisiveness in the minds of many. But there are those defenders who say that really this was just because it is so complex, as you point out, and that every action has a reaction, and every reaction has a reaction, and that kind of thing is always very dangerous. Suppose the Russians, who perhaps were in on this mild response, but perhaps their rhetoric, they really mean their rhetoric, which has, of course, been an angry rhetoric. What is going to happen? What is going to happen because they have taken down the agreement with the United States so their planes didn't collide in the middle of the desert over Syria? What happens if their planes do collide? What happens if they get engaged in combat inadvertently? That kind of thing. Not only that, but how is Assad going to respond? Is he going to try and increase the provocations to try and basically say to the world, you can't scare me? What about North Korea? How is that going to play out? And as a matter of fact, we now have North Korea as another theater.
Yes.
As you pointed out, the ships are heading there now as a show of force from the United States. How is Kim going to respond to that?
Mm-hmm. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is going to Moscow this week. The word from Moscow is Putin will not meet with him. I don't know if that's true or not. We're getting conflicting ideas here from Nikki Haley and Tillerson. Now they both seem to be on the same page. He's saying, I hope Russia is thinking carefully about its continued alliance with Bashar al-Assad, because every time one of these horrific attacks occurs, it draws Russia closer into some level of responsibility. Do you see a much harder line developing now against Russia on the part of the Trump administration?
Or the perception of a harder line, which I think that the administration is now trying to cultivate, again, being, if you take the cynic's point of view, you have to point out that probably the biggest problem that Donald Trump has in terms of maintaining his presidency is the perception that he had somehow colluded with the Russians in order to win the United States election. This certainly would put that to sleep for a little bit, for a little while. In addition to which, do not forget that Rex Tillerson, in fact, was the winner of an award because of his dealings with Russia when he was the CEO of Exxon. So it's all that gets kind of tangled up.
Mm-hmm.
You also have Nikki Haley, who just a couple of weeks ago had no experience in foreign policy, and now she's sort of being perceived as taking the lead when it comes to presenting the hawkish face of the administration.
Mm-hmm. There have also been some shakeups in the administration. I was listening to On Point this morning with people who were highly delighted that Donald Trump has some people who seem to know what they're doing in defense and in national security who are making decisions, kicking Bannon off the National Security Council, that these decisions are being made by some grown-ups in the room. Are they?
Well, there are a couple of grown-ups, if not in the room, at the Pentagon and at the National Security Council, a couple of ex-military people, of course, high-ranking military people. And they've been around the track before. And in the case of both of them, they had some trouble getting approved and had some trouble with the people, the commissars who are around Donald Trump. And I use that word facetiously. And, of course, in the case of Steve Bannon, we've all delighted in, you know, the palace intrigue that's going on now.
Yeah, and he seems to be on his way out. Kushner, who's doing everything in the world. I mean, this son-in-law is in charge of Middle East peace and what's going on in Syria and what's going on everywhere. All of a sudden, he's been incredibly elevated, hasn't he?
Well, he has been, and what little is not in his portfolio seems to be in his wife Ivanka's portfolio.
Right.
We really have a Trump administration, and Steve Bannon, who's quite the ideologue, is running into the family ties. In the case of the Trumps, it's looking like blood is thicker than water.
Yeah, it does. So what does this do to the, not the FBI investigation necessarily, but the House investigation? Adam Schiff has said it's back on track. We have new House leaders who are in charge with Nunes, a departure from his leadership role there. Does it mean full steam ahead on this investigation, or does all of this Syria business complicate that enormously?
Well, first of all, Devin Nunes showed himself to be over his head. I mean, he really overplayed his defense of Donald Trump to the point that it became laughable. So now you have another staunch defender of Donald Trump leading the investigation, the head of the Agriculture Committee, Conaway, who is now leading the investigation. And Nunes, by the way, still stays on the Intelligence Committee. At the same time, you have the Senate investigation going on. And in the House, you still have this sort of vague thing. I really think that the more important investigation will be the one that is being conducted by the FBI.
Mm-hmm. Which could be some time.
It could be some time. And there's so much that could change, so many dynamics that could change, that it may have less impact by the time we learn what was going on with that.
Mm-hmm. What about these warships going to the coast of North Korea? What's that all about?
Well, it's about one of the ways that in sort of the geopolitical world that a nation shows that, hey, no more Mr. Nice Guy, is to send warships to a particular area. The Russians do it on occasion. Certainly the Chinese do it. The Iranians have done it on occasion, even harassed some ships of the United States, for instance. It's sort of a way of saying, you know, you better not fool with us, because if you continue to mess around, we're going to, you know, we're not going to play games anymore. It's a way of being hard-nosed without really being hard-nosed.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls as we carry on with all these discussions. Our guest this hour is Bob Franken. He's an Emmy Award-winning journalist who hails from his first job in Marshfield, Wisconsin. He's covered so much. He's covered the Iraq wars. He's covered the White House. He has covered for 20 years plus at CNN. He has been a Capitol Hill correspondent, a Supreme Court and White House correspondent. He writes the Frankincense column. It's nationally syndicated, and he's with us this hour. We, of course, start with Syria. I'm interested in your thoughts on this. Where do we go from here? It's an incredibly complicated war that's going on there. Are there people, if our goal would be to get rid of Assad, then who steps in? We've already tried to fund some opposition forces, and some of them have gone to ISIS, and that attempt to train people didn't go very well. So do we have an end game here? What do you make of the decision? And a lot of people feel his poll numbers went up as a result of this, that it was the right thing to do because of a horrendous chemical attack, and the United States has to do something about that. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. In case you missed the president's comments on Thursday night, here's what he had to say about the missile attack in Syria.
Assad choked out the lives of helpless men, women, and children. It was a slow and brutal death for so many. Even beautiful babies were cruelly murdered in this very barbaric attack. No child of God should ever suffer such horror. Tonight I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched.
Bob Franken is our guest for All Things Political, and let's start our calls with Rich in Rhinelander. Hello, Rich.
Hi. My question for your guest is, I'm no military strategist, and I do indeed want to, before his 4 years are up, believe something that President Trump has to say. You played that clip where he said no child of God should suffer this kind of chemical attack. My understanding is that the attack did not take out the airfields. It did not take out the airstrips at that airport, and reports were that within about 36 hours after the attack, flights were again seen coming and going from that airstrip. I'd like your guest to either correct me on that point or to confirm that that hardly seems like a sincere military strategy if you're trying to prevent chemical attacks.
Well, first of all, I would confirm your information. That's exactly what happened, and it is viewed as a gesture of defiance on the part of Bashar al-Assad. Now, in the second wave of attacks, that same airfield was, by the way, used for the sarin attacks on the same city. And 36 hours later, I don't even think it was that long, the Syrian planes once again used those very same runways, this time to use conventional weapons and drop some more bombs on that very same city. That would, on the one hand, as I said, be a gesture of defiance, but it could also be viewed as a really mild response to what occurred there. And Kathleen, you were talking a bit ago about how complex all this is, and you even mentioned the fact that it's all interwoven with the battle against ISIS.
Right.
And what is so interesting is that the administration is really presenting different voices on that subject. On the one hand, there are some members of the administration who are pointing out that really you have to take on ISIS and solve that problem, which is going to take a while, before you can really turn to Assad. And Assad presents himself as a real protector against ISIS. And it gets even more complex the further that you go.
Right. And the Russians, too, right? They're protectors against ISIS.
And the Russians, too. And you never understand what their motives are, and you don't understand how they fit into the American political scene. I mean, I think that we all agree now that they had some success in disrupting the U.S. election. But you don't know the relationship. You mentioned at the very beginning of the program that, as far as we know, that Tillerson is not going to meet with Putin. I suspect that there's going to be a sudden meeting between the two, and some sort of message that we're not going to know about is going to be carried back to President Trump and his people in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Rich, thanks for your call. Bob in Hurley is next. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm sorry. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Bob, thanks for all that you do, and I appreciate your reporting. I'm just curious, at a basic level, this civil war in Syria has been going on for, of course, years. What are they warring about? Who are the factions? And does anyone in the world anticipate this war ever coming to an end?
I'm among those who think it's going to be a very, very long time. What they're warring about is, if you remember, what was it, the Arab Spring? It spread a little bit to Syria. And the Assad government, of course, has a real iron-tight grip
on the population there. So when there were demonstrations, when there were people who were suggesting that maybe it was time to reinstate a democracy and get rid of Assad, he responded in brutal fashion, to the point that he shocked the world, to the point that it was a stated policy of the United States, ultimately, to get rid of him. And then we had the unfortunate incident where President Obama created that so-called red line, to use his word, which Assad was able to defy. And it really just sort of the United States lost so much credibility that we did not become a factor. Now we have a Trump administration who really says that it wants to do what it says that it wants to do, which is basically to leave Assad in power and concentrate on ISIS. But then you have this attack on the cruise missile attack. And so the question is, what is going on? And I think that changes from day to day.
The other thing that I must ask, because a lot has been made of this, Bob, the president seemingly quite moved by the images, the horrendous images that we all saw of the results of this nerve attack, this gas attack in Syria. But we've also seen these very disturbing images of young children who are being washed up on the Mediterranean shores because they're trying to escape from Syria in boats that you know, capsize, and people are drowning, and you have millions of Syrian refugees, and we have this ban on Syrian refugees coming to the United States. It doesn't quite jive in a way many feel.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, as critics are quick to point that out, that the very same man, as you say, who is expressing such concern for the Syrian people won't let them into the United States. And those are two issues that certainly are juxtaposed.
Yeah. What's going on with that ban? Is it coming to the Supreme Court at some point, what his restrictions are? Where is that?
Well, it's sort of at the appellate level right now. And if you get different appeals courts who rule differently, I would expect that it was going to come to the Supreme Court. And it's a really interesting issue. On the one hand, the President of the United States, whoever is President of the United States, has a huge amount of latitude when it comes to matters of immigration outside the borders of the United States, a huge amount of latitude. And that has been reinforced by Supreme Court decisions since almost the beginning of the Republic. On the other hand, we have the charges that this is really a ban on Muslims, and that, of course, is forbidden by the Constitution. It's an interestingly complex issue. I suspect that the appointment of Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and, of course, he today took the oath and all that kind of thing, could have a huge influence on that. I would expect that there's a strong possibility that President Trump could be ultimately upheld.
Let's go next to John in Appleton. Hi, John.
Oh, good day, and thank you very much. Great show. One comment and a question. Comment is, I'm not a fan of the Trump administration, and I thought that, or think still that, maybe a national or worldwide day of prayer for troubled spots around the world could do quite a bit of good. I know the Pope was helpful with breaking the ice in Cuba. So comment on that. And the question is, have you, our guest, and thank you for all your work, have you been impacted by the Trump administration's the attack on White House media? Have you endured shaming or excommunication, so to speak? Sorry to be so Catholic today, but what's been your reality in this new age?
First of all, I sort of revel in the fact that people don't like me. I sort of feel like when it comes to professionally, you're not supposed to be liked. It's just not that kind of profession. You're supposed to be respected, and you're supposed to have credibility. But quite frankly, there have been, since I've been in the business, there has been no politician of any significance, certainly no president, who has had any affection whatsoever for the media. Some of them have been more subtle about it, but Barack Obama my God, was awful with the media. He kept on, through his Justice Department, harassing people who were reporting on leaks, you know, to the point that when they were found out, there was such an outrage that they had to back down from that. But Barack Obama was no friend of the media. I can tell you that the Clintons certainly were no friends of the media. And George W. Bush, who was very jovial about it, also hated the media. And on, as far as back as you want to go.
Mm-hmm. So this president hasn't said particularly outlandish things, calling you the enemy?
Well, yeah. I mean, but Donald Trump says outlandish things about everything. You know, he whips up to a frenzy some of the people in his mobs, for want of a better word. But, again, we have to have a thick skin. And, you know, there's all this hand-wringing that's going on. Quite frankly, I think that our trials and tribulations have been overreported because they concern us. We just sort of have to suck it up and do what we have to do to report the facts and not be influenced by the fact that we don't like whoever it is we're covering. We're not supposed to like anybody that we're covering, and we certainly should not be influenced by the fact that they don't like us.
Mm. John, thank you so much for your wonderful call. We just in passing mentioned Neil Gorsuch. He was sworn in today. What do you expect from him, Bob?
I expect that we're going to see Antonin Scalia light. I think that this guy is a committed conservative, and I also believe that anybody who thinks for a minute that judges are just, in fact, arbiters, as Chief Justice Roberts called them, umpires, has been smoking something. I've forgotten. Is Wisconsin one of those states where you can smoke something now?
Beats me. I don't smoke any of those things. I don't really.
neither do I. Washington, D.C. is, but I sort of figure it would be redundant if I did, so
yeah.
I don't.
No, I don't think you can in Wisconsin. Somebody, I'm sure, will call and let us know the answer to that. Our audience will know.
Certainly, if I remember the University of Wisconsin, whether it's illegal or not, you can do whatever you want there.
Right. I'm sure it's to be found in the state. We have a lot of people writing in, so let me read a couple of these, respond to what you'd like. Sherry from Whitewater, could Trump and Putin have gone on this middle attack together to deflect attention from the Russia investigation? A lot of people are cynical. Listener Paul, I'm sorry to be cynical, but I believe a primary purpose of the attack is political, diverting attention from the Russia connection. Matt from Wausau writes, we have a lot of nerve taking the high road when it's our own misguided aggression in the Middle East that destabilized the entire region.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, first of all, this is a region that has not been stable, certainly since the end of World War II, where they basically carved it up and created countries. And it has always been simmering with this jealousy, that jealousy, and, of course, there's the battle with Israel that is ongoing, that kind of thing. And I should point out that, predictably, Netanyahu of Israel strongly supported the cruise missile attack. But so the region has never been stable. What it has been is a place where there is so much oil, which has meant that what stability there is based on economics, that kind of thing. But at any rate, as for the comments about some sort of clever little plot, some sort of collusion on the part of the Russians and the Trump people to create this problem so they could deflect attention from the investigations that are going on. It's an intriguing thing. Usually I'm not such a conspirator, so conspiratorial, but in this particular case, I have to say that it's a little bit suspect.
Hmm. Let's go to Jim in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me on again.
Sure.
I appreciated your guest comments about Gorsuch. I'm an attorney, and while I find Donald Trump's travel ban deplorable, I think your guest comments are right. The Hawaii federal judge who struck it down really took into consideration Rudy Giuliani's remarks and Trump's pre-election remarks about what, you know, this was a Muslim ban. However, when looking upon a legal analysis, and Gorsuch will be a what's called a black letter law guy, you look at the statute and the language of the law more than what's outside of the record, and unless somehow you can get that, you know, other commentary into the record, I think on a 5-4 majority, it will, if not 6-3, will be upheld. And I'll take your guest comments off the air.
Thanks,
you.
Jim.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I happen to think that a failure of the law, and of course this is a fundamental failure, is that it relies so much on its statutes, the construct of the law. And without any disrespect intended for the caller, I would point out that there are any number of people who've made a lot of money as attorneys by twisting around what the statutes say and all this kind of thing. So as I say, that is, number one, its greatest strength, I mean, talking about the legal system, and also its greatest weakness, the fact that it can be distorted like it is. In the case of the Supreme Court, as I said earlier, there are, in fact, some precedents on both sides of this issue, and it's just going to be a matter of the particular inclination of the justices to decide which way that they go. And you can make an argument, legal argument, for both sides of this issue.
What's going on with the wall? Is the administration going to get around to building it?
I think that the administration is going to say that it's wanting to get around and building it, but there are so many complications, forgetting the fact that there is so much money involved, that I, to be perfectly honest about it, don't think it's ever going to be built, number one. Number two, look to April 28th, so you'll get a strong idea of whether this ever has a chance. That is when the government must be funded again. If it doesn't fund itself, Congress doesn't fund it by April 28th, there's another government shutdown. That's not going to happen. What's going to happen is that the Democrats are going to hang tough, and they're going to say no money for the wall, and the Republicans are going to go along with that.
Hmm. And the budget, is that when the budget's considered as well? Because we've got a budget that has made a lot of people upset.
Well, it is and it isn't. Right now, all you have to do is to fund the government at some sort of level. And I think that they're going to delay any real consideration of the long-term budget proposals of Donald Trump, simply because, first of all, they don't stand a chance, at least in today's political environment, number one. Many of the cutbacks that he would do have congressional constituencies. But beyond that, all they really need to do is to fund the government right now and fight over the various budget proposals when we get to the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th. Hmm.
Let's go to Roger in Green Bay. Hi, Roger.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, most of the Middle East conflicts, I believe, is because of the religious differences between Sunni and Shiites, and I think Assad belongs to a smaller sect with a different belief. I think that solution belongs in the religious tolerance. Instead of going and teaching the tolerance or trying to get that, we're trying to find a military solution. I don't think there will be any military solution in my impression. I don't know what is your speaker's impression on that.
Well, you know, I think it's safe to say that many, if not most, of the world's wars throughout the history of the world have been fought over religion. And in this particular case, what you have is an intramural fight between the Muslims, the Sunni Muslims, and the Shia Muslims. And it gets quite frequently, it gets violent, and it's no different than the fight between the Catholics and the Protestants in Ireland over the decades. Mm-hmm. No different than what we had in the former Yugoslavia. On and on and on and on. If you look closely at just about any conflict, it has a religious basis to it. Yes, religious tolerance would be a wonderful thing, but it often just seems to be humanly impossible.
Hmm. Thank you so much, Roger, for your call. We're going to continue our conversation. It's All Things Political, Mondays at 1 o'clock. Bob Franken is our guest this hour. We spent a good chunk of the hour talking about the military strikes conducted by the United States on Syria last Thursday night and what will be the consequences of that. What's the Trump administration policy? Many of you calling have been rather cynical, seeing a connection between the administration being under fire for the Russian investigation by the FBI and the House and the Senate and this action time because of that. Others are highly supportive. The president, from Democrats and from Republicans, got a lot of praise for his action. The response to the deadly nerve gas attack that killed people who are innocent in Syria. What is the plan from here after the military attack? What is the plan now? What's the reaction to the reaction to the reaction? What about the Iranians? What about the Russians? How they will respond? What about Tillerson's visit to Russia, which is coming up this week? We're talking about that. We're talking about Steve Bannon. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about Steve Bannon. What's going on with those who are close advisors to the president? What about this split? They were supposed to meet together, Jared Kushner and Steve Bannon, on Friday, you know, meet together and work it out. Did they work it out? Does it mean that the Bannon ultra-conservative wing of the administration's advisors is losing some credibility and Kushner is getting even more responsibilities? Holy cow, does he have a lot of responsibility? We're talking about that as well. North Korea, we have a warship about to reach the coast of North Korea. Is it good for us to show our military might and make the North Koreans cower? We haven't talked a lot about the meeting with the Chinese president, which took place in Mar-a-Lago over the weekend. We'll talk more about that with Bob. Here's how you reach our conversation. We have some lines open for you right now. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at @KDunnShow. And we would love to hear from you about all of this, because after all, it's your country. And before we take a brief pause, this is what Rex Tillerson had to say on Sunday talk shows about Russia. This, of course, just a couple days before he will be there.
I hope that Russia is thinking carefully about its continued alliance with Bashar al-Assad. Because every time one of these horrific attacks occurs, it draws Russia closer into some level of responsibility.
Emmy Award-winning reporter Bob Franken is our guest, longtime reporter in many capacities for CNN, commentator on MSNBC, writes the Frankincense column, which is nationally syndicated. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we go to Alex in Milwaukee next. Hi, Alex.
Hello.
Hi.
My comment is about Trump and his bombing campaign. I just find it beyond belief that all these people are suddenly rallying to the support of the president just because he flopped a few bombs across the world. You know, nobody cared about all the barrel bombs that Assad was dropping, but suddenly this is a red line for people. He's been killing people consistently. And the idea that, like, you know, he has bipartisan support, in it, but it's all these establishment neoconservative Democrats or all these establishment, you know, New York Times, Washington Post commentators who are rallying behind him, you know, just out of nowhere. You know, they act like the Democrats are supporting him as well, but of the true progressive left, the 46% that voted for Bernie, their viewpoint hasn't changed one bit, and even the far right is all pissed that he's going into war when he promised that he wasn't going to start these escalations, and there's no clear vision. There's no nothing. You know, I think it's a big ruse, and it just, you know, deviates from all the bad news and all the drama, and it's something that people think that they can get behind because they're all too scared to speak against the military when that's not what they'd be doing. They'd be speaking against somebody that they've been consistently saying is dangerous and, you know, is unpredictable, and somehow him throwing a bunch of missiles across the he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Thanks, Alex, for your call. Bob?
Well, you know, it's interesting. First of all, that has been a widely held opinion. After the euphoria, and I choose that word very carefully, there was a certain missile euphoria right after Donald Trump ordered that the missile attack go against that Syrian airfield. And it's the kind of thing that seems to happen all the time. And it is quickly replaced by more sober reflection. So now you have any number of people who are speaking publicly and saying, well, wait a minute, this could be more complicated than it looks. And now you're hearing the critics speak out and the people who are saying, you know, maybe it's just not a good idea to go to war. We may have a real dilemma here where there is no good answer.
Hmm. Well, what's the answer to getting a country to stop using chemical weapons?
We thought we had the answer with Barack Obama's red line.
Right.
When he backed away from that, there was a diplomatic solution that that allowed for the Russians to be the guarantors of Assad's agreement to get rid of all his weapons of mass destruction, his chemical weapons of mass destruction. But apparently and predictably, he didn't get rid of them all. And so we have the situation that we do. That is the kind of thing that could prove embarrassing to Russia. I was going to say the Soviet Union, which it seems more like these days, but to Russia. And maybe, in fact, Russia is really kind of annoyed with that. What we don't know is what we don't know, and that is just about everything that goes on in the world of diplomacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know a lot of things right now, do we?
Right.
We just don't know.
But then I built a whole career on that.
Alex, thanks so much for your call. Patty in Waukesha, hi.
Hi. I am calling about something that was touched on earlier about the, you know, the 59 cruise missiles. And I guess what my question is what, if any, damage did they do? I would think one cruise missile would do some damage. But, you know, if it didn't even, you know, stop the planes from going down the airway, what did they even hit? Or did they miss it?
Well, I think that they hit one or two planes, if I recall, maybe three. So what I'm trying to do is I think the missiles cost about $40 million to launch. I think they're $800,000 a missile or something like that. Maybe they're on sale at Amazon for a little bit less. But in any case, $800,000. So we have about $40 million worth of missiles. And so each of the planes that it hit, probably the three of them probably account for $10 million. And I'm being facetious on purpose, of course. Other than that, you hit a couple of bunkers, some arsenals, but they didn't hit the runways. And in fairness, President Trump tweeted that the reason you don't bother with the runways is that they can so easily be repaired. But, you know, inconvenience them for at least a couple of days while they're repairing them. The fact of the matter is that it did not take out the airfield, and Assad made it very clear that he was going to be defiant by using that very same airfield to attack that very same town.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Patty, for your call. Chris in Madison is next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good afternoon. I was wondering if our president, who many of us refer to as the Manchurian candidate because of his obsequiousness towards Putin, may finally be ready to declare independence and actually criticize him for Putin for his complicity.
Well, you know, first of all, I referred to him during the campaign as the Moscowian candidate. But beyond that, there's no shortage of people in the administration now who are saying really harsh things about Russia and about its complicity with Assad, that type of thing. Whether that is just window dressing, whether it is sincere, and in fact, as the caller suggests, that maybe things are going to hell in a handbasket, we'll see. But it could also be an atmosphere, being the Pollyanna that I am, where, you know, business can be conducted. And as a matter of fact, if I were Assad, I would be kind of nervous about the treachery of his Russian patrons.
Hmm. Well, it's going to be so hard to figure out what the truth is here, isn't it? I mean, case in point, just look at this Russian investigation, which is going to go on and on. And you've got all these already established, lots of connections, business connections with all of these Russians. I mean, it just puts it into a category of what in the world is going on here.
Well, it does. But, you know, if this was a trial, that would be circumstantial evidence.
Right.
And just to beat a cliche to death, that we don't really have a smoking gun yet. And that is what the various investigations might at least determine, or at least convincing evidence.
Right. And to talk about this change in policy, let's go back to Bannon and Kushner for a moment. There have been reports that Bannon really is on his way out. He so much was guiding Trump policy for such a long period of time. Does this indicate the influence of his son-in-law, of all people, a 36-year-old Jared Kushner, who's in charge of everything now? Is Bannon on his way out? Are we hearing a Kushner philosophy of government now, or what?
Well, you know, Kushner is presented as the more moderate of the two, which is not hard to do when you're considering you're talking about Steve Bannon.
Right.
But he's still terribly conservative. He still has some points of view that are really repugnant to an awful lot of people. And I'll tell you how Steve Bannon might do him in. And that is to get some reporters and some comedians to refer to Jared Kushner as the real president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably really hurt his father-in-law's ego. That was one of the things that was bothering Trump about Bannon, is that Bannon was being portrayed, and frankly was portraying himself, as sort of this Rasputin, the power behind the throne.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Chris, for your call. Paul in Jackson, hi.
Yeah, hi. I remember when we invaded Iraq the second time, we bypassed the chemical weapons and didn't secure them, Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. And I remember hearing reports that it all ended up in Syria. Is it possible that it is those chemical weapons that Assad is using? I haven't heard any reports.
Well, there's a reason that you haven't heard that report. The whole idea of weapons of mass destruction was just a fiction. I covered the second war in Iraq. I covered both of them, as a matter of fact. And time after time after time, the military, public affairs people, who could only sometimes be trusted, were pointing out to this one munitions factory after another munitions factory and saying to me, Bob, this is where he was hiding the weapons of mass destruction. And cursory investigation would find out that was not the case at all. But they were hoping that since I had live television capability, that I'd go breathlessly reporting the fact that we found what the weapons of mass destruction that everybody was talking about. And it was bogus. It is bogus. It was bogus. And as a matter of fact, some of the more civilized voices in the Bush administration admit that they were had.
Hmm. Paul, thanks for your call. Kenneth, Janesville, hi.
Hello. I guess I'm more cynical than anybody, in that the gas used on the Syrians was Russian gas, in that the Syrian gas was pretty well checked out by the UN, as I remember, that it was all gone. But the Russians don't come without weapons of mass destruction. I mean, just to protect themselves from being a small group of soldiers in the middle of these millions of Muslims. And
there was
a lot of talk in the Pentagon that this was actually Russian gas used by Russian planes, I mean flown by Syrians, but that used or was used in Syria.
Bob?
Well, the question I would have is, what difference would it make unless the Russians were, in fact, assertively providing the gas, saying to the Syrians, now go out and use it? It wouldn't matter what its source was. One has to assume, because based on what we know, that it was Bashar al-Assad, who's the one who decided, I think that I'm going to attack this town, a rebel-held town, with sarin gas.
Hmm. What's the deal with Russia and Syria? What's in it? What's in it for Russia?
Well, what's in it for Russia is that traditionally Israel has been protected by the United States. This goes back to the Cold War, of course, and the Arab countries, at least some of them, including Syria, were the Russian client states. And this is sort of a holdover from that. Add to that the complication of Iran. And add to that the complication of a very pro-American Saudi Arabia, and it starts becoming really convoluted. But, of course, that is the definition of the Middle East.
Right. It sure is. All right, Bob. Well, that'll do it for today. I guess it's enough.
We've only scratched the surface.
I know we have. I know. Thank you. Always great to have you as a guest, Bob. Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Bob Franken, our guest this hour, he's with us from time to time for all things political. He's an Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covered, both Iraq wars. He covered the White House during the George W. Bush administration, the impeachment proceedings of President Bill Clinton. He's covered the Supreme Court and Congress, focused attention on Guantanamo Bay prison camp with extensive on-location reporting. He's been a deputy assignment manager in D.C. for CBS News, and he started the whole career in Marshfield, Wisconsin, and is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. We thank him so much for being with us. If you didn't make it on the air today, we do have this Facebook page, and it's really good to be able to read your comments, particularly about something as significant as the airstrikes on Syria and the ramifications of those strikes. We're interested in knowing what you think about that. Thanks to Colleen Duvall for producing this hour, and thanks to Colleen as well for on-air production here in Milwaukee. We have news coming up momentarily from National Public Radio. In the second hour of the show, we're just going to talk about poetry and listen to poetry because this is National Poetry Month. We'll have the Wisconsin Poet Laureate with us and the Milwaukee Poet Laureate with us, so stay with us.